You are listening to a sermon by John Longhurst, recorded on Sunday, August 10th, 2014, at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or be distributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, it's a delight to be here with you today. I'm just going to ask quickly, how many of you grew up on a farm or in rural Canada? Oh, yeah, it's lots of hands. And that's a story that you'll find out throughout almost all cities in Canada today. Canada has rapidly urbanized, as you know, and a very, very small fraction of the population now lives on farms. I'm a city boy. I didn't grow up on a farm, and I've become more familiar and more educated about life on the farm and the issues that farmers face in Canada today. And I've become aware and I've become convinced that there's more than just two solitudes in this country. It's just not French and English, it's also rural and urban. And when you go to a farm show, which I now have the privilege of doing, and you stand beside a $500,000 piece of machinery and you talk to farmers about the challenges they face in farming. When you talk to a farmer and you ask him, how big's your farm? He says, oh, it's just a small one, 6,000 acres. You realize that farming really has changed and things are very different today. And at the Food Grains Bank, we're privileged to represent a lot of people in rural Canada who have made the Food Grains Bank their own. Lots and lots of urban people support us as well. But the Food Grains Bank, the genius of the Food Grains Bank is that it grew out of a group of people in rural Canada about over 30 years ago, and continues to provide an excellent service and an excellent resource to hungry people around the world today. But thinking back to that story we read, the story about the widow, Elijah, the widow's son, and the flour and the oil that did not run dry. There's a lesson in there about the Food Grains Bank. We remember that story as a story of God's faithfulness to our obedience, doing something that seemed crazy at the time and being rewarded for it in the end. But we might also remember it as one of those stories in the Bible that happened, you know, just back in Bible times. It certainly wouldn't happen today, because who ever heard of a fridge or a pantry that never ran out of food? But in my position at the Food Grains Bank, I can say that it does happen today. It happens all the time. It happens through the Food Grains Bank. Food Grains Bank is a miracle in many different ways, and it's a miracle for the world's poor, and it's a miracle for Christians here in Canada. So Andre touched earlier on the fact that being mindful of the poor and hungry is a biblical imperative. In the Old Testament, God gave a set of laws to the people of Israel to ensure that people who are poor and hungry are never permanently forgotten. For example, there was the law of gleaning, and you probably remember this. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field to the very border, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest, and you shall not strip your vineyard bare, and you shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner, for I am the Lord your God. Then there was the law of the tithe. God claimed a tenth of all farm products which the Israelites produced. This tithe was designed to provide not only for the Levites who ministered in the temple, but also, again, quote, for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. Then there was the requirement to hold a year of Sabbath or Jubilee every seventh year. And during that year, landowners were to allow the poor to benefit from the crops that they grew, so that, as it says in Exodus, the poor of your people may eat. It's hard to imagine something like that happening today, and there's no evidence that it happened very regularly in the people of Israel back in the Bible times either. But the principle remains. This was to be a society, God said, under the reign of God, that would not allow people to be pushed permanently into hunger, poverty, and the margins of society. So when we get to the New Testament, this vision of a society where no one is poor or hungry continues in the life and ministry of Jesus. When Jesus launched his public ministry, he went to a synagogue, And reading from the prophet Isaiah, he announced a favorable year of the Lord. And this favorable year of the Lord is likely an allusion to that year of Jubilee, that year of Sabbath. So in Jesus' first public proclamation, he announces that his kingdom will be very different from the Roman Empire and very different from the society around him. It's going to be a kingdom where the poor and widows and their children always have enough to eat. So this vision of a world where nobody is hungry is foundational to the creation of Canadian Food Grains Bank. Let me tell you a bit about the Food Grains Bank. The idea for what became the Food Grains Bank goes back to the mid-1970s. That's when farmers in Western Canada were troubled by hunger in the developing world. Back then, there was a famine in Asia and Africa. At the same time, these farmers had bumper crops. They had more food than they could sell. And it seemed wrong to them that one part of the world should be hungry and another part of the world would have more than it could use. But there was absolutely no way for them to get that extra food from Canada to the developing world. It was the wheat board system back then. It governed the shipment of grain. There was no way to work outside the system. So the farmers appealed to Mennonite Central Committee to do something about this. And in 1975, after consultations with the Canadian government and the wheat board, the MCC came up with a plan for the creation of a food bank. It allowed farmers to donate grain to this bank so that it could be shipped with the permission of the wheat board to hungry people around the world. And for inspiration, the founders looked at the story of Joseph and the Pharaoh's dream. And we all remember that story. The Pharaoh had a dream about fat cows and thin cows. And when Joseph interpreted the dream, he told them that it meant that there would be 7 years of good crops and 7 years of famine, and that they should use the time of the good crops to prepare for when things weren't so good. So when MCC created the food bank, this Joseph principle, as it was called, was a guiding idea. Unlike regular banks that stored money, this bank would store food, and it would store it until it was needed, and then it could be withdrawn and sent to people anywhere in the world. Now, MCC ran this food bank until 1983, and that was the year it invited some other denominations to join it. Five denominations accepted that invitation that year, and Canadian Food Grains Bank was born. The Canadian government came alongside, promising to match the value of the food donated by Canadian farmers. And today, the Food Grains Bank has 15 members right across the theological spectrum: Catholic, Evangelical, Mennonite, and mainline. And that is another of the miracles. We talk about the miracle of the flour and the oil. This is a miracle of Christians working together. And I know we take that for granted, and perhaps we all, maybe here in Vancouver, that's something that happens all the time. But it's not normal. It hasn't been normal. But in the Food Grains Bank, there are something like 16 million Christians across this country represented by the members. And that is a fantastic thing that brings people together to work on this one common theme. So every member in the Food Grains Bank has an account, and that's where they can deposit donations. And these donations can sit for months or years until needed, although lately they've been needed a lot and quite regularly. These donations are then used to buy food overseas. And for you at Point Grey Mennonite Fellowship, MCC is your member, and you can make a donation to their account. So when a member wants to do a project, it can apply to the Food Grains Bank for matching funds from the Canadian government. So if MCC needs $500,000 to do a project, it puts in $100,000 of your donations. It receives $400,000 in Canadian government money, and then has the money that it needs to do that project. Matches are also available for lesser amounts to do what we call food security work, which is helping people to grow more and better food. In addition to that, another benefit of the Food Grains Bank is that the members share money with each other. So right now, there is a terrible famine growing in South Sudan. Most of the members of the Food Grains Bank are not there, but the Anglicans are, and ADRA, the Adventists, are. So what will happen is that the United Church and the Presbyterians and MCC will give money to those two members to do programming in South Sudan. This means that MCC and all the others don't have to reinvent the wheel. They don't have to get staff and infrastructure and organization and partners and all those other things that you'd have to do to mount a food response. They can simply say, here's $1 million, please go feed those people. So it really works very beneficially for everyone in that way. So let me tell you a little bit about some of the ways the Food Grants Bank has changed. In the beginning, the Food Grants Bank literally shipped food from Canada to overseas. And millions of people in the developing world were helped in this way. But of course, that's not the most efficient or effective way to do food aid. Because not only is it costly to ship food overseas, it takes a long time to get it to the areas of need. And not only that, but providing free food undermines local farmers and local economies. Because nobody can compete with free. So today, Canadian farmers still grow food for the Food Grants Bank, but the food is sold into the system, sold to the elevators, sold to the grain companies, and the proceeds are then donated to the Food Grants Bank, and we use that money to buy food and assistance and projects, support projects in the developing world. Those projects are matched, as I said. This means that the food gets to people more quickly, more efficiently, more appropriately, and best of all, it supports local farmers in the developing world. So let me tell you a bit about how the money is raised. In the early days, farmers donated grain to the Food Grants Bank through grain drives. These grain drives were events where farmers brought grain to local elevators. The grain was weighed, it was cleaned, bagged, and loaded onto railroad cars and then shipped to ports east and west. In the early 1990s, these grain drives gave away to growing projects. And these are events where farmers, churches, businesses, and others come together in rural communities to grow, to plant, tend, and harvest a crop on donated or rented land. At harvest time, the crop is harvested and sold into the system, and the proceeds are then donated to the Food Grants Bank. These events can involve dozens and sometimes hundreds of people from various churches and the larger community. Sometimes they're supported by urban churches, perhaps like your own, which are located hundreds or thousands of kilometers away and make a donation to the project to help them rent land or pay for inputs. And it's quite something on harvest day when you go to a harvest and you stand in a field and you see combines coming from north, south, east, and west. As farmers drive them to the field, there can be 10, 15 combines coming, and then they will take off the crop and they'll put it into trucks, and the trucks will take it to the elevator. It's quite an amazing community event. And today there are about 250 of these community growing projects from Prince Edward Island right through here to British Columbia. Some of them are big, like on the prairies, involving hundreds of acres, and some are quite small, with apple trees or vegetable gardens. There's even one out in the East Coast where they sold lobsters. And some of them aren't even on farms. People hold concerts, and they run marathons, they walk, they do all sorts of different things to raise money for the food grants. So in terms of what this adds up to, since its founding, 1983, Food Grants Bank has provided over $700 million of assistance for millions of people in 78 countries, and this has included over 1.1 million tons of food. Last year, we provided $42 million of assistance for 1.3 million people in 42 countries. And at the same time, the Food Grants Bank has become one of the leading food aid and food security organizations in Canada. And for this, and I like to point this out to Mennonite congregations, it's because of the Mennonites, it's because of MCC. MCC gave a tremendous gift to the Canadian Christian Church in birthing the Food Grains Bank and making it available to all denominations. And it's quite a marvelous gift that has come from the Mennonites. So how do we use all that money? Well, we use it in several ways. One way is to provide food aid for people caught in emergency situations due to drought, conflict, or natural disasters. Major crises we responded to in the last few years have included Somalia and East Africa, the Sahel region of West Africa, and also in Syria. We have a large program helping Syrian refugees right now. Another way we use these funds is that it's something for what Andre talked about, food security, helping people in the developing world to grow more and better food. I had to smile, by the way. One of the programs that we're really big on is something called conservation agriculture. It's a no-till and very dedicated way of planting seeds in a certain way to make sure that they grow efficiently. I had to smile when we sang that song because, in fact, almost no farmers today plow or scatter. And you look at it, it's from the 18th century when that was written, when you did plow and scatter. But now if you go to the prairies, the majority of farmers are no-till farmers, and they use seed drills, and they can plant them like 3 centimeters apart very accurately. So that's a great hymn still, but we have to change it to we no-till and seed drill or something, and don't scatter. But we're also teaching that in the developing world. They have a big problem with soil erosion, and particularly with climate change now, with the rains not coming like they used to or being more intermittent. Moisture preservation is a big problem. So with conservation agriculture, we're encouraging farmers not to plow their land, and then to cover it with mulch and grasses to preserve the moisture so that they also can improve their crops. And finally, we do nutrition programs, particularly for mothers and children who are often the most adversely affected by lack of good quality food. So those are the facts and figures, but let me tell you a few stories. Let me put some faces on the work that we do. Let me tell you about Sarah Dua. She's a 50-year-old widow in Mali. She received food from the Food Grains Bank, and not that she wasn't hungry anymore, but also put an end to her feelings of shame. Because before she received help, she had to go door to door begging her neighbors for food. And for Sarah, the food not only meant that she had something to eat, it also meant she no longer had to suffer the embarrassment of begging. Now she said, quote, "I can go out without shame. This food has helped me reclaim my dignity." And then there's Sylvester Lembris, a farmer and mother of 5 in Tanzania. The support from the Food Grains Bank meant being able to help her children get an education. Through a Food Grains Bank-supported food security program, she learned conservation agriculture that allowed her to increase the yields of her small vegetable garden. One of her more successful crops is kale. The local name for kale is Sukuma Wiki. It means stretch the week. It's called that since kale helps the family budget go further. It's available when other foods aren't available. And Sylvester is happy with her kale crop because it's good to eat and also because it's easy to manage. And since she's been doing conservation agriculture, she's had excess kale and she's now able to sell some, which allows her to provide more food for her family and also to raise some income. So she's earning about an extra $3 Canadian a day from her small garden. So says Sylvester, "Now I can sell some of my vegetables and buy maize. And when my children need shoes or textbooks, I can sell some vegetables to buy them for them." Then there's Latif Anoun of Syria, who's now in Lebanon. For him, the support from the Food Grains Bank meant he could find housing, find some stability in life, and look after his son. Latif's wife died during childbirth, along with the infant, and together with his son, Leif, they escaped from the fighting in Syria to Lebanon. In Syria, he owned a cosmetics store and lived a comfortable middle-class life. But in Lebanon, he couldn't find work. And he said, "Here we're suffering to eat." And he was embarrassed because he couldn't provide for his child. But food vouchers from the Food Grains Bank made life easier. The vouchers allow him to save money on food so he can pay a portion of the rent for the tiny apartment that he and Leith share with 18 other people. He said, "We would be on the street if not for this." And then finally, let me tell you about Ramatou Malon Hassan. She's a widow and mother of 12 in Niger, and help from the Food Grains Bank meant literally that she and her family did not die of hunger in 2012. Because like that widow who met Elijah back in 2012, she and her family were facing starvation due to drought in the Sahel region of West Africa. The drought caused her harvest to fail, just like it did for 18 million other people in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso. When the drought hit, her crops suffered, and she was only able to harvest enough food for 7 or 8 weeks for her family. So when the food ran out, she went begging. and said Ramatou, quote, "I would go from house to house in the village asking for help, but there was no food left in the village." So she went into the bush and she began foraging for leaves. Said Ramatou, "I would go into the bush and collect leaves, tasting them and discarding any that were bitter. Then I would bring them home, soak them, and boil them. Then I would eat them myself and wait 2 or 3 hours. If I didn't get sick, I would give them to my children." So the kids ate the leaves, and their stomachs were filled, but there wasn't enough nutrition. Said Ramatou, "We were getting weak, and I was afraid we were all going to die." But then, like the miracle of the oil and the flour, food arrived from the food grains bank, part of a $10 million of assistance that helped provide food for 288,000 people in the Sahel region. And the food that Ramatou and the others got helped them make it through the drought onto the next planting season. And of the food she received, Ramatou said of her children, "Before we had food, the children would only be able to lie down. They had no energy, but now they can play again." To show her gratitude, she composed a song of thanks. She taught it to her children so that they would always, as she put it, remember that we have been helped. Do that one. God is great. The song goes, "God is good, God is great. No one is as great as God. Thank you for bringing us food. My children, I'm telling you, know that this food rescued our life. God is good, God is great. No one is as great as God." Book of Matthew 25:35, Jesus says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. And I was a stranger, and you invited me in." And in the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, verse 10, we read, "If you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry, and if you satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like noonday." I'm in the special position being a staff member at the Food Grains Bank. I say it's a special position because I get to interact with people around this country who support the Food Grains Bank, who have a heart for those who are hungry, heart for those whose lives are in danger, heart for those whose lives are not what they could be because they don't have the ability to grow as much or have as much food as they should. And I get the chance to hear their stories, to feel their compassion, and then be the vehicle that helps to bridge it, to bring it to people like Ramatou and all the others. And so providing food for people who are hungry is a way for us to let our light shine here in Canada and around the world. And one of the ways that you can do that is through Canadian Food Grains Bank.